Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back, and it is Now or Never, and we kind of kicked some things off on, well, actually started with the best intent on trying to get into what we need to know, what we need to be doing, and so forth. And so I think that there's a lot of things I need to cover, but I still have the daily obligatory, because I think everybody needs to understand, because this tends to be the epiphany or the awakening point when people start realizing just how much they're going to foreclose on you over this fraudulent debt. Everybody should be alarmed. I mean, most people look at it like we can't do anything. And I'm telling you, folks, they can't do anything because it's fraud. And as a matter of fact, it's wrong for us to allow it to continue. Now, I know there's people out there that go, hey, who cares? You know, as long as they keep writing checks to give me money, or as long as we're benefiting from the fraud, then that's okay. I understand that the fraud that is being perpetrated by those who are, you know, buying you off, all they're doing is they're making you lazy. They're making you complacent. They're making you actually culpable in watching everything go down. All you're doing is sitting here watching this train wreck actually unfurl, or actually just, you know, the magnitude of it just piling up in front of you, actually. So you need to start realizing how important it is that you get involved. Now, I see on social media, and I hear people talking, and, you know, we've come across so many different, I'll say, efforts out there of trying to, oh, well, there's this new shiny way of becoming, you know, free and unentangled from all of these government, you know, gotchas and strings and their control of you. Folks, if you're not attacking government by using the Constitution and getting them into compliance to that, whatever path you're using, because we've covered the paths, and it actually came to me that there may be another path out there or two. But if you think there is another path, then let me know, because the common paths, and I'll cover them again real quick. The party is a path of resistance incapable of forcing compliance. The courts are another path of resistance incapable. It is so corrupt that it actually protects and preserves and propels the corruption further down the road. The other path is this concept of a convention of states that, you know, oh, well, we'll just, you know, we'll go in with the intent of making amendments because they've been following the Constitution so well. And the only process, this is what they tell you, the only process in the Constitution that is actually, you know, to hold government accountable is the convention. They're banking on the fact that you don't know in the First Amendment is the only process of holding government accountable. That is the First Amendment right of petition, period. And it just bothers me that the people that argue against them are, you know, out there telling you, well, you know, don't convene the convention. We're just going to ignore the laws. We're going to ignore the evil that our government is doing. When Madison clearly stated otherwise, that we needed to interpose. But let me put the interposition path, you know, to the end here. So we've got the nullification, and the convention of states is a binary conversation. And that right there, the fact that they have a binary conversation, only shows you how evil and how they're working together. Oh, but they'll never tell you that. And as a matter of fact, there are plenty of people within each of these organizations that are convinced that their mortal enemy is the other organization. It's almost like if you've ever seen how, you know, these guys have this, you know, knockdown, drag out brawl, they're perceived by everybody as true enemies of each other. But after the lights and the show is over, they go out and drink and carouse, and they're the best of friends because they're working together and they're making money together and beating each other up. That doesn't matter. You know, it's almost like professional wrestling. Anyway, so then there's the secession movement, the sovereign citizen, state, national, all those other ones. And that is the one that, you know, is actually gaining more and more focus because it is entrapping people. And come to find out, you know, that there is this movement that is this secret movement that's a part of this. They're trying to get people to abandon the Constitution. It's another way of doing that, because that's what the secession movement does. A sovereign citizen abandons the Constitution, says, I'm out of here. I'm not a U.S. citizen anymore. I'm not paying your taxes. I'm not playing your game anymore. Well, you know what? You happen to be living in the country where the game is still being played. And you're putting yourself, your family, and everybody else in peril because you're not doing anything and you're just getting in the way. There's the armed revolution. So these are the paths. And then interposition. We go through exactly what and why Madison and Jefferson demanded interposition by the states to force the federal government into alignment. So with that, what I wanted to do, because before I get into covering what you should know by now, it has come to my attention because it seems like the topic du jour is the clarity that the conservative entertainment has on this new VP pick. Oh boy, the stolen valor, the true sacrifice and the true service that, you know, those men and women do in joining the military and how it's just being tarnished by, you know, Waltz. And so what I'm here to tell you folks is, why don't you take a pause? Why don't you just, let's just kind of kick back and, you know, enjoy watching the grass grow for a moment, because, you know, we're just going to cogitate. We want to ruminate on this idea of sacrifice and service. Now, we hear the tower to tower, or, you know, T2T, or these organizations that are there to help these brave people who stepped up. As a matter of fact, the Constitution requires every person to step up. When we're being attacked, when our Constitution's attacked, when our way of life is being attacked, we're all a part of the militia. We all need to be doing something. And so people that happen to be in first responder jobs, okay, well, that's great. Now, we actually have first responders, and they've been in service, and a lot of this service that they're doing is unconstitutional. However, and I don't want to wade through all of that at this point. But what I want to say is, we came up with a process and a method that it actually is abhorrent to the principles of what we ask these people who step into the call, or they stand up and step into that call when the nation says, we need you. And what I'm talking about is those men and women in the armed forces. They created a long time ago this bureaucracy, which to me, again, that's another unconstitutional reach by creating a separate bureaucracy, when technically the Department of Defense should have the responsibility of making these, those who served, and take care of them and give them what they need. You know, if we had to do that, then, and as a matter of fact, there's a lot of things I want to cover, and I could easily swim in this pool for a long time. Or I could easily sit here and wait to see the first inch of grass grow. It would take a long time. Now, the fact is that though everybody wants to point out Walls, I want to call out the fact that, you know, we get played by these conservatives. Because, as a matter of fact, as a veteran I'm here to tell you there are so many different double standards, and we got to start calling out the hypocrites, because it seems like the right really puffs themselves up because they're the ones that support us, when actually they've been manipulated or they've been co-opted into these ideas of tower to tower, or these efforts and organizations to give better aid and comfort to those who were first responders instead of those who actually stepped in to say, I'll stand in front of bullets. Are you to tell me that the fire department and the police department of New York City deserve better treatment than our veterans? No, they deserve adequate treatment for their sacrifices. That's what this country owes everybody. And the fact that they get their own little health care, and I'm telling you, folks, if you want to compare what they get compared to the military, it would infuriate you. Go to the VA and watch how the grass is growing, and you can actually see the apathy and the indifference in the system itself. Now, if these stars and all of these people out there really want to fix the system, then you force everybody into the bureaucracy and say, you know what? This bureaucracy sucks. This bureaucracy is inept. It's inadequate. Bottom line, I'll even go one step further. It is a violation of the contract that those men and women signed up to serve, especially those who signed up to serve in the 70s, prior to the, I think it was like early or mid 80s, when they changed the contract. Anybody that served was guaranteed, if you did your 20 years, you were guaranteed free medical and dental for life. And then Congress changed the rules and said, nah, you're going to have to pay for it. And oh, by the way, you don't get the full, we're going to fight you every step of the way to make sure you really deserve the attention or the medical care that you're seeking. Now, I understand that that's the standards for insurance. But when the government, who actually knows what they've done to you, and they have to, oh, well, we got to do this discovery. And they actually have empirical data that actually proves, you know, that certain things are just going to happen because it's been, they've done this for years after years after years. They've got models. They have the data. They have empirical data that says if you served and you did the standard ceremonies, just standing in ceremonies, You screw up your arms by standing at parade rest for hours, folks, while we listen to people bloviate, while we listen to people go on yammering their lips about the service of this and that. I can't tell you how many times in the Marine Corps I've stood and wasted time in parades. You know, the pomp and circumstance really makes certain people feel good. And I'm telling you, those people have shiny things on their shoulders. Or those people are those who absolutely get, I'll just say, the wind in their sails in their political campaign because, oh, look at what they do. They're doing this for our beloved military. Or for those who serve, for those who sacrificed on 9/11. Folks, you want to fix this system? Get everybody into it and actually let it be ran by those who are in the need the most. Because you know what? Everybody needs, and I think as when you really do this, then you're probably going to find that more and more people won't just ask for the world. They will start realizing, oh, you know, we've got to do this better so that everybody gets their share. We can't just believe that what they have is adequate, because I'm telling you, folks, it's really not. It really isn't. Considering what they were willing to do in stepping in harm's way, they deserve what our politicians are getting. Our politicians, there is nothing in the Constitution that gives them golden parachutes. As a matter of fact, the intent and design for public service, they were the cowards, and they knew this. They knew that they didn't deserve. This is one of the reasons why Washington had such humble reverence and actually went in the midst of a coup in the, I forget where it was, D.C., Pennsylvania, Maryland, Virginia. I think it was Virginia. When, you know, those who were being ignored from, you know, their pay, just their compensation for serving the country in the Revolutionary War. And Washington had to go in and actually, you know, quell these men. And he did what was necessary, knowing that they weren't going to get the satisfaction that they deserved. Because it's so easy to say, we'll give you anything, please, we'll write any check, protect our freedom, protect us. And then as soon as the threat has gone away, oh, well, yeah, was it really worth that? Well, did we really say that much? And they start marginalizing. When we talk about, because you hear me talk about Social Security, I believe that there, you know, every person that has been promised this process by their government, they have this obligation of honoring that. We have to end Social Security. It will destroy us if we maintain it. We have been the richest nation in the world, but we've been taking on debt in addition to that. It's time we end that. And as a matter of fact, don't even think that we're not surrendering and actually we're not subsidizing this global Bolshevik revolution of converting the entire world into a global state of communism. You know, the fact is, when you look at the Constitution, the primary mechanism of making money isn't placing taxes on your businesses and on the people, corporations, and so forth, these income taxes. Because if you look at the revenue that is coming into the federal government, the majority of the revenue is from income tax. And we don't tax any. You know, it was clear. It was clear in the Constitution that imposts, taxes upon the goods coming into America, was the primary mechanism of funding this nation. And now China brings in its crap. They're waging war, economic war, cultural war. They're doing all sorts of things to us because we've actually converted our system in attacking our own people. We're draining our own people and bolstering these other nations. Oh, well, yeah, we could do that because we were such a rich and powerful nation. Ah. The intent behind that shift of following the Constitution, which would have maintained America's greatness, by following the Constitution, we wouldn't be in this situation today. But what ended up happening is they created a circumstance that started and slowly started draining the marrow out of our backbone and making us weaker and weaker and weaker. Folks, I'm here to tell you America can actually surprise you. The people in America can actually stand up, can step up. Now, there are probably 10, maybe 15, 20% that are unreasonable on the left and right total. So I'm not saying that that's 40%. I'm telling you that it's about 10, 15, 20%, including both sides, on unreasonable. There are the separatists. There are, you know, because... there are people that really believe the government needs to actually, on the conservative side, there's plenty of people that really believe the government needs to be big to be able to provide good quality services. I don't know how you would call them on the right, but they're not liberals. They're not the classic liberals. This left and right has obscured true liberalism. But the fact is this, reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. Give America the chance and get them equally informed, and they will actually arise to the occasion because they'll start realizing what needs to be done. The fact that we have federal dollars getting poured into every state in the union, creating these god-awful roundabouts to basically slow your traffic down. You know, I hear people say, oh, these things are great. Yeah, well, just wait until you actually have to get out of town because there's a fire or what have you, and watch what happens. So, because it is a permanent restriction on your flow of traffic, permanent. It becomes a permanent tax on your ability to get from point A to point B. Permanent. Anyway, if you love your roundabouts, by all means, give me a call and let me know because I want to hear about this. But the fact is, it infuriates me when I hear conservative entertainers all enthralled with the concept right now of calling out walls over the stolen valor, over the lack of true service and the true sacrifice of what we were supposed to do. The fact is, folks, there are people that are actually suffering, and there are people like Walls that actually went into service to use it and to actually, you know, he didn't care. It was just an opportunity for him to arise, and then he basically wants to step on everybody. It's not like he's looking back and saying, these people need to be served. And as a matter of fact, there was no, clearly this guy is immoral. But don't look at the conservatives and say, oh, yeah, this segregated treatment of those who have served this nation, that isn't that great? They're not even realizing what the precedents that they're setting. If you serve this country as a militiaman, whether that's a nurse, a firefighter, whatever that is, there should be a mechanism that you should go straight into the DOD, because the VA needs to be shut down and put back into the DOD so that you get what's your due for the sacrifices, for the ailments, you know, even if you lost your life. As a matter of fact, it should be automatic. You should get the exact same life insurance coverage that the service members get. But folks, when we actually think that they should have something better, then we'll actually fix the system for those who truly serve. Because we will actually start having this honest conversation that, you know, because this is what the unions do. This is what these people that actually think that they're better than others. You know, firefighters, are they really better than the armed forces? Police, are they really better? As a matter of fact, we shouldn't even have police. That should be you and I. That should be we, the people, executing the laws of the union. We've covered this in detail. We should really start evaluating what Republican, because this goes right in line with Republicanism. Republicanism isn't just, you know, having people serve us. It is a self-governing system. This unique government that we were given actually holds us all accountable, not just the public servants, but we the people, because we the people have to execute the laws. This is why we can't be sleeping in this government anymore. We have to wake up and take our role, get our hands back on the wheel, and start driving government. This is why what we're covering at this point, what you need to know or what you should know, is so critical. And so we were talking about Republicanism on Monday when we kind of had to get, and I realized that it took half the show, because when I start ranting over an issue, it takes a little while, and I apologize. But what you should be doing now is one of those things that we'll actually cover at a later time. Republicanism, though, is not an ambiguous phrase, right? It's not, oh, well, Republicanism, because most people don't even know what it is. And so this is why we're going to dive into understanding what that phrase really means in America, because the rest of the world looks at Republicanism as a form of democracy. It looks at Republicanism as a form of monarchy. It looks at Republicanism as a form of dictatorship. And so what we're going to do is we're going to actually really break down this multi-layered Republican form of government. We'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so as I going into the break, I was basically just saying that republicanism is not an ambiguous phrase. Now, the world defines republicanism or a republican form of government that is one that is representative of the people. Now, there's all sorts of ways you can really boil this down. And when we look at the Constitution today, how many times do you hear people who are conservatives that actually they create this chant that this government was created for and by the people, when that's absolutely not the truth? It was not formed as a democracy. It was formed by a delegation of authority that was granted to a body of delegates who were actually appointed by the state, not the people that went and created that Constitution. And the amazing thing is that the Constitution that they created was not one that gave them some underhanded advantages. They literally laid the blueprint down of how we could have a government that had the levels of checks and balances that would have literally protected us. The problem was, is the states and counties didn't get on board. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, folks, had the Constitution come out, I've said this time and time again, had the Constitution been handed over to the states for ratification, and within it, in Article, maybe let's say Article 4 or Article 6, it basically required every state in the union to reconfigure themselves so that the state government would become a general government serving the counties. In other words, had they done it to a point where they really would have created the entire spirit of how it would to lay out, how it was to lay out with this hybrid constitutional republic, the states would have just rejected it. Are you kidding me? We have perfect governments. We have governments that are controlled by this aristocracy. How could that be, you know, what could be better than that? Because these men may have been very righteous, they may have been very noble men, but they were flawed in their, I'll just say, in their egos, in how they saw each other. Many of them, as a matter of fact, they wouldn't even admit the fact that they were basically trying to protect their thiefdoms. They wouldn't admit it. But deep down, we know that that's what they were doing, which is why they were attacking the Constitution. Not because there were flaws with the Constitution. The fact is, the Constitution should have gone further. But those men who wrote that, and I will just say the divine hand of inspiration that actually was responsible for this Constitution coming, you know, pen to paper, knew that it would have been rejected, that we would have failed in this evolutionary process of moving forward in a free society, a society that actually protected liberties. Now, Madison pointed out that every state in the Union, almost every state in the Union, had no Bill of Rights. He basically says that, you know, are we to believe that the federal government is going to be inferior to the state governments when we've actually delegated these very specific powers? We don't need a Bill of Rights. The governments that do need a Bill of Rights are the states, because the states had general powers. So looking, hindsight being almost perfect, folks, 2020 here, looking at how they created that federal constitution as a general government to serve the states, it only makes logical sense. You don't agree with me? Let me know. As a matter of fact, I'd love to hear your ideas. I'd love to hear you say, no, the state government is the best place for serving the counties and the people. And I don't mean I literally do not mean in a general government sense. In other words, that the county should be administrative agencies in enforcing. In other words, if you look at Madison's original plan, Madison was going to create a very strong and centralized powers of a federation. He was moving the Confederation into a federation where they would have almost all powers, that the states would become the administrative bodies for the federal government. But instead, they rejected that and they peeled it back down to a confederation that only provided limited services and support in protecting the states. And their focus was external, national security in protecting the states. And so when we look at our state government, why did the state government refuse to build upon that? Well, because they didn't want to give up the fiefdom. And so when these new counties were being created, why not in the new states? Why wasn't there this awakening? Because the people were busy. They were uneducated. I mean, Madison was clear. He talked about it. I forget what Federalist paper it is. It's around 10, maybe it's 11, but he talks about the ignorance of the people. And though he doesn't trust them, we have to create a system that at least gives them, you know, the ability to be equally engaged, to have everybody have the equal opportunity to serve. And so we have to look at, why is it that we just didn't do this? More importantly, when we actually break down this fancy phrase called we the people in our Republican form of government, that distills, that boils down to a democracy, which is why we have so many people that say we the people are democracies. You know, until we actually start teaching the concept of constitutional republics and a Republican form of government that is based on sovereignty, redefining Republican form of government from not just sovereignty of the people, but recognizing the government that the people create, giving them their own representation in that body government above them. That is the brilliance right there. That was the one thing that kept us and is basically keeping us from falling over. The framers, as a matter of fact, if you really take the time and you look at how they discussed government, we could easily go down this path of looking at how they talked about this perfect Republican form of government that Montesquieu talked about, where the people had, you know, these representations and so forth. Montesquieu never talked about the government of the people. They only saw one government. They didn't see the need for a three-tiered governing system. But clearly in America, we actually had three tiers. We had counties. The original states and colonies, they had counties. they had municipalities as well. But the area was considered a county, and that was the overarching government. And the state was the ultimate overarching government of all the counties. And the federal government was the umbrella, or the, you know, that coding or that layer that covered all of the states for very specific purposes. So really what we need to do before I kind of go further is I need to help you understand why democracies were viewed, because we were talking that the framers talked about these different forms of government and why they viewed democracies as the worst form of government. In other words, those people who claim the "we the people" phrase, "we the people," it was for the people, for and by the people, that we are all independent sovereigns, that we all should have equal say. That lip service is lip service to democracy. No. We create governments, and we create different governments. We maintain representation in each of those governments, and we delegate very specific powers. And if we're smart enough, we make sure that there's no conflicts in powers delegated. That when we create the power to create war, that's not to be done at the county level, nor at the state level. And as a matter of fact, the state can defend itself. The state can take action. The counties can as well. But when it comes to declaring war, that is left to the federal government. That's a very unique and specific power. When we talk about the state, we need the state government to have very unique and specific powers. And the real problem is nobody really understands what that should be. It should be their ability to working with other states. Unfortunately, the Constitution, as I've mentioned before, has created some of these inhibitors, or actually has a hardcore inhibitor that does not allow the states to work together. I honestly believe that that right there is a shortfall, because the republic has grown to a point where for it to be successful, the states need to have full say over its strategies within the union. And the fact that the federal government assumed these strategies like energy, education, and those types of things, they were able to weaponize them. That's what happens when you actually have a government that prosecutes war. They actually start utilizing all of those things that they're empowered with to prosecute wars in those same environments, in those same milieus, in those same disciplines of energy, economics, education, and so forth. So when we look at democracies, you know, the one thing that was kind of common knowledge was Tytler's Declaration of a Cycle of Democracy. He was basically at the He wrote that around the exact same time the framers were evolving this European form of government in the new world. It was evolving. And they all came to the same conclusions that democracies were the worst form of government. Because over time, the people would start using the public purse to basically carry them from cradle to grave. And that is not why we institute government. We didn't institute this government to carry us from cradle to grave. And as a matter of fact, understanding the importance of instituting government, we the people, when we institute government, it's two primary objects. The two primary objects, protect life and to protect private property. How is it? How is it that we've wandered as a government to allow our government to take our private property or even to take our lives? So when we actually look at what we need to do, it only makes sense that we actually have to reevaluate our governments. Now, many states have decent constitutions. Many states do. The problem is that the constitutions have been basically blown up by the federal government. The federal government over the years has been coming into the states and saying, we've created this Department of Transportation, this Department of Energy, this Department of Labor, the Department of Housing. You need to create offices and interfaces with us. And so when we look at your state government has offices, agencies, and interfaces for the federal government and those regulations. And I'm telling you, folks, they don't have the authority to do that. And the states should have been pushing back. But, oh, yeah, you know what? This really made a lot of sense that we need to have these housing standards. And the fact that they're coming with money to give it to us so that we can, you know, create this organizational interface. This is great. And as they continue to kind of pay for the operations, eventually, once those operations and that bureaucracy is galvanized and becomes a little machine within your state, the money stops. And so they come with money for the next one and the next one. And every time they abandon the latest or the last one or the oldest one, I should say, as they start basically handing it over for you to run, now you have three agencies that you actually have to fund. And this new one is coming in, they're funding that one. And, okay, that's great, but what does your government have to do? Your government has to raise its taxes to cover this unconstitutional mandate that came from the feds. You see how insidious this cycle is. You see how important it is to live by the compact. Now, there are lawyers, there are conservatives out there that have the audacity to assert that the Constitution is not a compact. And in the same breath, they actually cite and they live off of the words of Madison. When Madison, one of his most emphatic points he made throughout his entire career, was that Constitution was a compact. And Jefferson's the same way. I don't know of any framer that never considered the Constitution as a compact. So how is it today that we have lawyers? Because the Bar Association doesn't want you to place context to that. So I have to question some of these conservative lawyers that are actually polluting the pool by telling you that it's not a compact. I believe they're either operatives or they're incapable of seeing the forest through the trees. But bottom line, when we start looking at these compacts as more minutely, getting understanding what is this compact? This compact is a power of attorney. It is a mechanism where the delegates in creating that constitution insert very specific roles, responsibilities, powers, maybe the criminal jurisdiction. Maybe they want to insert, because bottom line, what we need to do is we actually need to look at the federal constitution and we need to reevaluate, because the federal constitution actually creates criminal jurisdiction. It says that these are the crimes that you have responsibility for. And as far as I'm concerned, that's what should be done with the states. We should actually have the same standards. We should, and we got to be clear that the standards cannot violate the U.S. Constitution. I'll give you a case in point. When we look at a representative that is a citizen of the United States and has been a citizen for 7 years and is 25 years of age, he has a right to be a representative of the people. Now, let's look at it this way. We have states in the union that have created this protection that says, you know what? We want to make sure that nobody can represent us unless they've lived here for a year. Right? And people go, well, that's a good thing. Really? Is it? What happens if you had a James Madison who was being underutilized in Virginia and you could, you know what, we could really use him here to actually help us fight and help us, you know, change, you know, our and solve many of our problems that we have with our own government. We'd love to have him come in here as a legislator and then maybe as a governor or what have you. why would you have to wait? The requirement of the Constitution for somebody to be a representative is right there in the Constitution. They have to be a citizen of 7 years and have 25 years of age. There's no residency of state for the federal office. And technically, when the state creates a parameter on top of that, how is that not a violation of the Constitution? The Constitution says he can be. I understand that at a minimum, he has to be a resident to represent those people. But this term of residency, 1 year, 5 years, whatever, that's unacceptable. And the only thing that happens when we create this, because a lot the argument is, oh, well, these people need to understand how life is here. Okay, so life doesn't start in that state with people having babies and then nurturing and developing those babies and you know, feeding them. And even though your food may be different, it's still, you consume it the same way, or maybe you lay in bed and absorb it through osmosis. Or my point is, folks, is that life is life. Government is government. And these people that really believe, and because they're all over the place, I deal with this all the time. It is hick. It is counterintuitive to an enlightened society to believe that, you know, somebody really has to come from this county to understand good government for this county. The only thing that we should worry about isn't whether they're our friends and whether we can control them. Is what we should be worried about is whether they understand the Constitution and will support it so that we hold them accountable. The idea that we want people in our government to serve their constituents and not the Constitution should be, you know, the blazing loud siren warning to say, this is not the form of government we're supposed to have. We have a limited and defined government. Even our public servants are limited and defined to those roles and responsibilities that are delegated to them. And not one of them is to make sure that money comes into your county or into your state so that you can have jobs. Not one of them is to actually kowtow, to listen to the people and make sure you got bread on your table or anything like that. Their job is to make sure that they execute efficiently the government, the general government that they should be operating at the state or the federal level. And even at the county, do you want your freedom, folks? Do you want liberty? Or do you want government to control everything? Because every time government starts controlling it, we start realizing how little we're getting of that thing that they control. I mean, Milton Friedman stated it best. You give the federal government the Sahara Desert, and they will run out of sand in 5 years. Think about this. The government has now assumed control over our health care. How many of you feel like you have overabundant health care services today? I can tell you, at the time Obamacare was even being discussed, there was an abundance and availability and access for those people who actually was taking care of themselves. If you had a job, you had access to health care, you had your own health care plan, your company had it or what have you, you could walk in and see a doctor within a week. Health care today is a joke, because if you have to see a specialist because you have these problems, they have tweaked it down. You got to wait months before you see somebody. This is becoming a standard, the way this hostility between providers and insurance and the patient is untenable, folks. We are heading down the wrong path. And guess what? Dentists, veterinarians, every aspect of medicine out there is going to get regulated if we keep allowing us to go down this path. You know, we're going to get to a point where people are going to actually be able to obtain status for their pets like you have with your children. In other words, you know, regardless of what the cost is, that life is precious and it's equal to human life. We're coming to that point where we're literally dealing with ridiculous. I mean, it's the same thing with the DEI, all these things. The folks, if you want to understand the solution, the thing that flushes all of this out is the Constitution. Does the federal government have the ability to regulate DEI? No. Do they have the ability to regulate race at all? No. Do they have the ability to regulate housing? No. Healthcare? No. Education? No. We could labor. I mean, we could just go on and on and on and on and on. Understanding republicanism and understanding the importance of who that person is representing. If it's in the House, they're representing the people of that county. Any person that talks to them from another county saying, hey, can you get on board with this that we need for, you know, helps us on out here on the coast, even though that's a desert guy or whatever. They shouldn't have access to your representative. And then when we talk about the Senate, that senator should be representing that county government in your state, not you, the people. Their focus should be on what is best in creating laws that make sure all counties have equal access, you know, have an equal playing field to compete. No advantages being given to, you know, the overpopulated or the ones in the, you know, the coast area or the mountains or what have you. There needs to be equal representation and equal suffrage for both houses. This is why we created a bicameral Republican system, because we do recognize that we actually instituted a government called the county. That is your government. Out of all the government in the United States, your county is literally your government. The state is a shared government of the people and the counties. But the county government is your government. And you have yet to create a constitution to delineate what roles, responsibilities, powers, jurisdiction, or what have you, you want them to have. They should have all of the, they should be able to play all of the rules, unless you have a county to play all the rules. What I mean by that is they should actually be, you know, they should be the holders of the jurisdictions of the crimes throughout the county and so forth. If you have a county that is so populated that actually has these, like I'll go back to L.A., then LA, you may need to have variations of jurisdictions and laws and so forth if necessary. I think it's important that, you know, if it's a good law, it should be applied everywhere. But if it's a law that's unique, and I'll use a good example, is abortion. There may be parts of that county will say, no, we don't want abortion. But there'll be other parts that say, maybe we do. But it shouldn't be for the state to say that everybody will be supporting abortion and paying for it. And as a matter of fact, it is abhorrent to make anybody, any person, pay for the consequences of bad behavior of another person. That is immoral and wrong. We'll dive more into this republicanism, what you need to know and what you need to be doing later. I'm G.R. Mobley, Reclaiming the Republic. We need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.